This is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
So much more meaning now, doesn't it?
Well, as I said to Will last week, it's not actually his quote.
Oh, right.
He was quoting somebody else.
Oh, who's the quote?
He was quoting the editor of New Scientist, I believe.
That's a good page. Plug. When I first started at BFM in like 2014, I always got told to look on New Scientist for stories.
Ah, yes, indeed. Very good.
So, Lisa has joined us, Lisa Bodell, our other producer. So feel free to jump in if you have any questions. Lisa's actually done a reading this week. We've read up on this because we had a bit of time today.
Oh, hell, I'm in trouble.
don't worry, it'll be fine.
But we will start with this drug ring case.
Indeed. Very interesting story in the Herald last week, and there was a big article in it in the Weekend Herald. All about this so-called London Underground drug ring that was busted, quite a long time ago now, sort of about 2011, I think, was when some of the first arrests were made. And supposedly this was worth sort of $50 million in terms of the amount of drugs that they had sold.
Wow.
And the way that this was done was that they were looking for drugs that were not deemed illegal, but which were close in chemical structure to illegal drugs. So things like ecstasy mimics and things like that. So the way that drugs work is all to do with their shape, really, all to do with their molecular structure and the way that all the atoms are put together. And so what you can find is that if you've got a drug that has a particular effect, then if you tinker around with that drug and put in a carbon atom there, here, or take one out there or whatever, then it could be that you make a more efficient or a more effective drug. And this is sort of talking about pharmaceutical drugs, or, you know, sort of therapeutic drugs. Now, obviously, this has gone to the, let's say, the illegal drug market as well, and this is a very, very big thing. So they're taking advantage of the legal loophole that if a drug is not specifically prohibited, then it's okay, then it's legal. And
that's just because it may not be considered illegal yet. Like,
yes, indeed. Yes, yeah, exactly. So this all started way back in, the early 2000s. I remember writing a column about, there was a thing called 1,4-B, which was a big thing, 1,4-butanediol, which was being imported as a CD cleaner.
Wow.
By this guy in Timaru, I think it was. And of course it was being imported as a CD cleaner. It was a GABA type of drug. It's a precursor to gamma-aminobutyric acid, which is, I forgot what that's called. But in chemistry terms it's called that anyway. Fantasy? So I can't remember. Anyway. And so that wasn't a banned drug at the time, and so he was busy importing this. It's cheap as chips as well, so, you know, and making a lot of money out of it. And so eventually that was made illegal. And that's the way it kind of works, is that
once they figure out the risks or the...
Yeah, so the illicit drug manufacturers are always one step ahead of the law. That's what they're trying to do. So if the law says that X is illegal, then they will take X and modify it a little bit and make Y, and that's not illegal.
But is this just a chicken and egg thing? Then the law catches up and then something new happens?
So there was a big argument, and this seemingly was a 6 or 7 year argument, about the legality of the drugs that these guys were selling. And eventually it came to court, and he got found guilty, or the lead guy, and got 10 years. But the really interesting thing, the thing that struck me, this is one of the very, very few stories that you'll see in the Herald that contain chemical structures in it. And,
I thought that was kind of confusing, actually. I wasn't expecting to see that, and I didn't know what to make of it.
Yeah, well, and that's my point exactly, because here are these poor 12 people on a jury, and it's their job, essentially, the crux of the case seemed to hinge on whether the drugs that these guys were selling could be said to be analogues of these other currently Class B prohibited drugs.
So they were supposed to decide if there was a relationship.
So how the hell are they meant to do that? I mean, they haven't got any chemistry. Well, I'm assuming they haven't got any chemistry training at all.
Yeah, well, you don't get any average Ellen in a jury. You might get one or two, but...
That's if you're lucky, yeah.
Yeah.
So they are really relying on... specialist who's been brought in to testify for one or t'other side, and seemingly, you know, if you watch TV, and whether that's true or not, you know, if you get a specialist for one side, then you can equally well get a specialist for the other side saying the exact opposite thing. So how are they meant to make up their minds about this? I mean, as a chemist, you could see straight away what they had done, that these things were obviously analogues. They differed only by a single carbon atom and three hydrogen atoms. And, you know, any chemist worth their salt, if they found that they'd made this particular drug, that's the first thing they'd do is they'd put on this thing called a methyl group and see if that improved it or changed it or whatever. And sometimes it works, and sometimes it works in the wrong fashion and makes, you know, much more dangerous things. So, you know, how...
So it was illegal.
Well, that's the thing. If they could say that it was an analog, then it immediately becomes a Class C drug.
But you're saying it was an analog.
I'm saying, oh, it's obviously an analog.
But
obviously,
these people,
to me, you know,
may not have had that knowledge.
Yeah. So.
And the decision came down to them.
As I understand it, yes, that did seem, as I say, to be the crux of the case. There was the big legal argument over what an analog is, and they
problem.
Were talking about not
problem
being able
in
to
the
find,
justice system.
Well, but I mean, it's probably true of any trial. I mean, you know, you get it. This isn't just chemistry. This is anything. You know, where you're getting experts testifying.
So what you're saying is that the defense would have potentially had a chemist or anyone posing as an expert on the matter that would have said that it wasn't an analog, even though it really should be, and everyone should be able to see it.
Yeah,
anyone who's an expert.
Yeah, very, very possibly. And you know, that's the defence's job, isn't it? They've got to defend. So, you know, if they can find someone who's willing to say that it's not, then of course they'll put them up.
Ethically speaking, it's kind of...
Hey, we're talking about the law.
Yeah, I know.
Here.
It's like,
nothing to do
we're
with
getting
ethics.
Too close, and I'm going to play the sting because we got it made especially.
Yes, indeed. Oh, you know, we're not passing judgment here.
Okay.
You know?
It's just science.
It's just science. Yeah.
Yes, we played it. We are getting too close into that.
We are not passing judgment here. Absolutely right.
But we're pointing out that there is an issue here, possibly.
Yes, there is. I can't see a way around it. Mm. But to me, there certainly is. And you know, as I say, it's a question to be decided by people with the training. And yes, the experts are going to have the training, but you know, can they convince these, you know, 12 good / women, men and true or whatever, you know, in the jury that have to make the decision? So it's an interesting question, I think.
Yes,
so,
and we could probably talk about it for a really long time, but we're going to move on because we have short time today. Lots
segue.
To get through.
Very good.
What's next? Moons. Jupiter, we found out that Jupiter's got a lot of moons today.
It does.
69, right?
Well done, 69 moons.
I was
there
like, is it one moon? Is there anyway?
Well, when I was a lad, it had 12 moons.
Right, so we're moving up in the world.
Oh yes, indeed. That's what happens
when
you send
more.
Sort of spacecraft up, and they can see all these tiny little rocks that are, you know, going around. So there was a spacecraft called Galileo, and that was launched in 1989, and that was to have a look at Jupiter and its moons, basically. And it did that, and it went around taking photos and blah, 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 blah for about 13 or 14 years. And then in 2003, they crashed it deliberately into the surface of
Jupiter. Oh, my God,
Jupiter.
Rude.
Really, really fast. Yeah.
The hell?
Well, you know, it was either going to do it itself or they had to sort of, you know, so they did it really, really fast so it wouldn't leave any trace or anything like that. So it's okay.
Okay.
I don't think there's any.
It wouldn't leave any trace. They crashed it into something.
Yeah, but it's going to burn up like you wouldn't believe.
Oh, right.
Oh, yes, indeedy. Yeah. There's no.
So
little,
nothing. It's just gone. It's disappeared now.
There'll be a few sort of iron atoms floating around in the atmosphere from it, very probably. But so in the interim, so they were travelling around and looking at the moons of Jupiter. One moon in particular was called Europa, and they found some weird stuff when they flew past Europa that they couldn't quite figure out. And they found, excuse me, that the magnetic field changed very, very quickly just as this thing was zooming past. And they found sort of this ionized gas as well. And they couldn't make head nor tail of that. So they put it to bed, didn't think about it for another sort of 16, 17 odd years after they crashed the thing in. And then in 2016, they had the Hubble Space Telescope. We've talked about that before.
That's right.
Remember?
Know what that is.
That's the one.
Yep.
And that had been taking photos of some of the moons of Jupiter, and they saw these plumes emanating from this moon called Europa. And they thought that the plumes might actually be water, so coming out from the surface.
Ooh.
And so what they then did is they went back to this data from this old satellite, this old spacecraft, Galileo, and they found, ooh, hang on, this looks interesting. So they simulated what would have happened if these plumes were in fact water, and that the spacecraft had flown through it, and it agreed perfectly. So what they now think is that these are real-life plumes of water coming off Europa, and they've done some calculations. They reckon there's a truckload of water there. In fact, there's more ocean on Europa than there is on Earth.
Apparently. Wow.
So even though the temperature is about minus 160 degrees, surface temperature, it's a bit cool.
It's a bit cold.
But below that ice, you've got liquid water, seemingly, and it's kept liquid because of the enormous gravitational force of Jupiter, the biggest planet, huge gravitational force, and that keeps things warm in the core of the moon, and so there's certainly water there. And then where there's water, there may well be life. So
there's aliens.
That's the only possible explanation. Yes, yes, that's the only possible conclusion you can draw. There are aliens. Possibly not, but...
Well, I mean, I don't think we can really say that there's nothing out there.
Oh, no, we can't. We absolutely can't. But, you know, this is going to be a candidate then for further exploration now that they've found water, because life as we know it is impossible without water. Who's to say that there aren't other types of life that we don't know? That, you know, don't rely on water. But water's a really, really good start. So the presence of water could well, you know...
So are they going to focus here now more than...
They're talking about sending a probe sometime in the 2020s, apparently both NASA and the European Space Agency. So, you know, it's a pretty big thing. Mm. So it's really nice that they could reinterpret all that old data that they just sort of put aside and they didn't have an explanation.
I wanted to make a point where you say weird stuff. It's like weird to us because we didn't know, you know. Weird because we don't know stuff.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Yeah. Now we know a little bit more, but people out there probably, or other things out there, would have known before us. Anyway. Cool.
So, yeah, that's a nice wee story.
I mean, not go and invade another planet.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it would have left a little bit of a trace, so there'll be a little bit of Galileo probe sort of, you know.
Did you see that meme that came out when they found something on Mars and then they put an American eagle on this meme and it was like, oh, there's water on Mars or something, let's invade Mars now.
Oh, dear. Yes.
All right, segue. Final note. We've got a special birthday.
Yeah, we do. So May the 11th, 1918 was the birth date of one Richard P. Feynman, who hopefully some of the listeners have heard of. He was one of the great physicists of the 20th century. He was a Nobel Prize winner for his work on a thing called quantum electrodynamics, which merged quantum theory with special relativity. So this is Einstein merging with Schrödinger and Heisenberg and all of those folk. You know?
Cool.
But the really, really cool thing about him was that he was sort of... when you think of physicists, you think of doer people, I think, you know. Not imbued with a sense of humour, probably.
Oh.
You know, come on, tell me I'm wrong. You know, your average physicist...
I don't know many, personally. I've got great rapport with a chemist, but...
Yeah, well, physicists aren't anything like us. But anyway, so one of his great quotes was, physics is to maths what sex is to masturbation. Now, that's a really, really good quote when you think about it.
Physics is to maths.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, you understand what
you
he's saying.
You go on, explain it.
No, explain it.
It's just basically saying physics is better.
Yes, it is. You know, that it's sort of based on maths, but maths is nothing, you know, and physics is... Yeah, but...
I'd say that's pretty funny. They seem funny people.
Well, that's the thing. He's, you know, he's a bit different. But he's a real popularizer of science. And he, you know, he's a Nobel laureate and he's giving first year lectures at Caltech. That's not what Nobel laureates do. They don't sort of, you know, end up giving first year lectures. And his lectures are so good they've sort of been packaged up in the Feynman Lectures on Physics. They've been published as that. If you YouTube him, you will find old black and white videos of him doing these lectures. And, you know, he's really, really good. He gets up there with a bloody blackboard and a piece of chalk and away he goes. And very, very accessible, very, very interesting guy. His final claim to fame probably came with the Challenger disaster. What, you remember? No, you would have been around at the Challenger disaster.
What year was it?
86?
No, I'm 24, Alan.
Oh, boy. Oh, dear. I don't know how many years...
90s, baby. 90s, baby.
Right, I'll leave now. the Challenger... So that was when, obviously, the space shuttle blew up after it took off. And the reason that it blew up was this O-ring that sealed... the fuel tank, basically. And it was a really, really cold morning in Florida. There was a frost, and the O-ring failed. And nobody sort of figured this out, but he, at the inquiry, made a very, very devastating demonstration. He took a glass of iced water, took a little O-ring, and just sort of dropped it in the water and showed that it was brittle and that it snapped. And, you know, he basically solved the whole thing. And he was very, very ill with cancer at that stage, and I think it was very, very sad. But, yeah, a really, truly great physicist. And, yeah, the other story about him was his first wife. She had TB, which was incurable at that stage, and she was sort of his childhood sweetheart, and he married her, and he could only kiss her on the cheek for fear of infection. Mm. And he took her with him to Los Alamos, where he worked on the Manhattan Project, the atomic bomb, and she died 2 years later. So, you know, really, really tragic story. But
it is very tragic.
But anyway, sorry to finish on a downer.
I hope people talk about you on your 100th birthday, Alan. Making science really accessible since ages ago. Back after this.
That was Dear Science.